Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
My name is Jari Bolander. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast. On this podcast, we're going to take a deep dive into the traits, values, beliefs, and skills of all sorts of entrepreneurs to learn how to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient world. Let's get started. Hello, everyone. Stay tuned to the end of the interview, as usual, where I'll give you some actionable insights that I learned from my guest. These insights are also at the show notes, and all the show notes are at theentrepreneurethos.com. As always, thanks for listening. Thanks for the ratings and reviews. Thanks for the retweets. Thanks for the shares. Well, just thanks for everything. Now, on to my guest for today, Jen Graham of Inclusive, formerly Civic Dinners. Jen trained design, but described herself as a community organizer at heart. She helped start TEDx Atlanta, and while she saw a lot of value in the messages the speakers brought, she found herself getting frustrated by the limitations of a model that was speaker-centric. Her search for other models of fostering discourses around significant topics led her to exploring models like salons, Jeffersonian dinners, and focus groups. From here, she formulated what became Civic Dinners, a structure to bring a small group of diverse people together to discuss topics of importance in their community. The idea took off, generating interest from local governmental groups and nonprofits that were looking for a way to engage millennials. This is when Jen realized she needed to start thinking of this project as a business. Civic Dinners, now Inclusive, has hosted numerous gatherings, providing the greater Atlanta community ways to talk, offer input, and share stories. It's given organizations at various levels critical feedback they haven't been able to get anywhere else. It has been a way to elevate consciousness around social issues, and that has been the most gratifying result for Jen. The organization successfully pivoted to going virtual in 2020, and has developed a library of 50 different topic series, as well as a structure to ensure a sense of safety, trust, and connection. Jen reflects on how learning to listen and how to disagree with empathy has made an impact on her community, but also on her understanding of how to be a good leader. Now, let's get better together. Jen Graham, welcome. Welcome, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Jerry. Thrilled to be here. Thanks.
Well, thank you so much. You are the founder of Inclusive, which is such a fascinating company, formerly Civic Dinners. So kind of get a little kind of hint at what it may be. Was really intrigued by this. And actually, you came to me through a cold email from Abby, over at Blast Media, which I literally used as an example of one of the best cold emails I've ever seen.
That's so awesome. She's so great.
And so I thought, wow, okay, cool. This is like, you know, some pretty cool stuff. And I always love talking to founders and talking to people that are creating companies that help us connect. Because we were talking before, this is like a Ben Franklin dinner or Jeffersonian discussion. I mean, you know, real hardcore, and hardcore is maybe a bad word, but a a way to really connect with people that you don't agree with and like have that conversation, which is what we try to do. I try to do on this show, but we're going to get into all that and how it came about. But before we do that, as I always like to say, tell us how you got to do what you're doing today.
Thank you, Terry. Wow. Well, I have always been a community organizer at heart, and I was trained as a designer. And what was intriguing to me, I had helped start TEDx Atlanta in Atlanta and put on these conferences over and over. And after about a dozen, I started to become a bit frustrated with the lack of kind of progress or momentum after one of these big conferences with 300 participants. And I started to realize that it was the voices that were on stage that were really only the ones being allowed to present their ideas. And I tried to experiment a little bit with that model and allowing for Q&A or small group discussions. And we got our kind of wrists slapped a little bit. So I decided.
Never good. But, you know, gotta sometimes push the edge a little bit, right? Where the edge is.
Exactly.
I love it.
So I was like, well, maybe there are other models out there that would allow the participants to participate, to allow greater participation, and allow everybody to be able to have a voice and have a say and be able to contribute their own experiences or what they know to that particular topic. And so I looked at salon models and Jeffersonian dinners, as you mentioned, and even just traditional even focus groups. And I realized like there's so much power in going small and allowing a simple structure, because I mean, the TED model of an 18-minute TED talk. I mean, you kind of knew what to expect. And building a little bit of that in, I pretty much created what we used to call a civic dinner, which is the recipe for that was a 6 to 10 guests, a host, 3 big questions on the topic that took you on a journey through a shared experience using some organizing principles woven in around the story of self, the story of us, and the story of now. And with some basic ground rules, such as one voice speaking at a time with equal time to share. And so it was the complete opposite of traditional TED talk, where, you know, there's one speaker and everybody else listens the whole time. It was really about no expertise required. You're really there to listen mostly and to share your perspective and to respect one another's. And there's actual psychology behind this model where if you know that you're not going to be interrupted or you know you're not going to be responded to in a form of debate, you're more open to sharing really truly how you feel or what it looks like. And it's a different psychological mindset to be in when you know you're not going to be interrupted. So there's a little bit of power there, even within the form of therapy, group therapy. And so when we trialed this total social experiment, it started in 2015 with just a group of renegade millennials in Atlanta and
Renegade millennial, I love it. As a Gen Xer, I'm like, renegades are cool, you know.
Thanks. Yeah. But yeah, we were really wanting to make a difference and wanted to have a say in the future of Atlanta. And it was we were at an inflection point as a city and really wanted the only ways to really get involved was either to run for office or be on a board, which you had to be wealthy to be able to donate. And so it kind of left us out. You could volunteer, but so forth. But how else can we have a say in the future vision and the future of the city? And so we built this model as a way to bring voices together, meet people where they are as well, allow them to host and give them the tools that they need to host their own conversations around dinner tables or parks or picnics or in homes and in office spaces. And so we built a very simple website to allow people to be able to set up their own conversations and then be able to download the host guide and then be able to capture their feedback from guests and participants. And we had 60 dinners in 6 weeks. And it just took off. We had influencers hosting and people popping up. And all of a sudden, and there was no business model behind this. This was just what if, you know? And then all of a sudden, we were like, whoa, there's incredible appetite here for this kind of conversation. And then The Atlanta Regional Commission came along. It was a former client of mine. At the time, I was a consultant and working with local governments, nonprofits to help them tell better stories. And community engagement had become a bigger portion of my work. And so they're like, hey, we're trying to figure out how to get the millennial perspective and include it in the long range planning process. Do you have any ideas? And I go, well, we just did this inner party thing and it worked really well. And suddenly we had a moment. There was a business opportunity of, hey, you need a creative engagement tool and model. And we found one. We just need to systematize it and make it work. So we built collaborated with them, built three different topics around the topics they cared about: mobility, livability, and prosperity. And launched it, had over 300 millennials from around the region engage in conversation and dialogue all across 10 counties. We were able to collect that feedback through technology and ended up winning numerous awards for that. It was the first time government had ever used dinner parties as a way to really bring people together and collect insights that fed into the regional planning, the 25-year plan. And so after that, we had, that was back in 2015, and then 2017, we finally built our own platform that would allow other regions and organizations, because suddenly we had nonprofits and companies coming to us saying, hey, can we use this conversation structure over food at the time to be able to bring our employees together around these topics and so forth. And so soon we had a partnership with the King Center around bridging the racial divide. When we had an election in 2016 that really stirred up a lot of social issues. And so all of a sudden, the whole world was craving conversation on topics that weren't taboo to begin with, things like women and immigration and climate change and racial justice. And so suddenly,
you know, Georgia was the center of that 2016 in Atlanta. I mean, the whole I'd say the front line, so to speak, of all that just crazy craziness is maybe not the word I'd use, but boy, some serious, we're figuring it out down here. And it's really, it was really cool. It was very, it was just very heartwarming to see. And then even the 2020 election, which was even closer, and the real challenges and struggles. It's just, I hope as time goes on, that those models will help us as a country heal to a certain degree. Cause we're pretty feel broken, you know?
Fractured for sure. And so when you ask how I got to where I am today, I think, we started as a total social experiment to figure out how can we almost elevate the level of consciousness around really important issues and also give people the tools to be able to bring their people together and to be able to give them the self-organizing tools. And to be able, and using technology to be able to do so, and using both of those is really what helped us create what was called Civic Dinners and now Inclusive. And so our shift over the past, our journey has been a ride, to say the least. We had 2020 came and canceled dinner completely. We had to shift online, so we had to pivot completely to virtual, build in that virtual meeting capability into our platform. Through partnerships with web-based RTC, I can get into the detail there, but, and also all the others. And then we had just launched our Inclusive series back in March of 2020, which fell on crickets because everybody was scrambling to come up with what COVID situation they were going to handle within the workplace. And then we were able to be the exact solution that companies were looking for in the summer of 2020 when George Floyd was murdered. And we were just at a gasp of what was happening. And we were able to really come together and pull together for our community and even the country. We launched new topics that were relevant to racial justice and ended up expanding our Inclusive series to 24 different topics spanning heritage from wide variety all the way to mental health. And now we've even expanded beyond that into sustainability with our sustainability series and topics around that. And also work and well-being, just to make sure that, the mental health and the well-being of our society is really at risk, given the increase, dramatic increase, 10x in anxiety and depression, severe mental health that is affecting us in ways that we're not even aware of. And so making sure that we have the tools to engage each other and our friends and our neighbors and our communities and even our workplaces with the tools to be able to create the brave space to be able to talk about this and what's happening at a, from a societal angle, and then how it can apply to us as individuals and leaders.
Yeah. Wow. That's pretty heavy. But no, in a good way. Well, it's just interesting because, you know, when I talk about it all the time, when Jane, my late wife, died, I was part of this thing called the dinner party. Have you heard of the dinner party?
Yes.
So I went to a couple of them. This, obviously, she died in 2017, so COVID wasn't around. And I had a mixed experience with it, to be honest. Partly because grief and sorrow affect people in different ways. And it just felt like a downer. You know, I was sad and angry and upset, but I'm kind of like, okay, well, how do I move forward? How do I, instead of falling back, fail forward, or like, what am I going to learn from this? Because, you know, now I can say, hey, you know, everyone says, well, what good, you know, when someone asks a question, what good came out of your wife dying? Like, a couple of years ago, I would have hit him in the head. Like, there's nothing good came out of that, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, when those conversations happen, and the dinner party kind of set that the stage for that, but it was just always so downer. You know, everyone was like upset. And, you know, I remember I went to my first one. It was like 2 months after Jane died. And they're like, 2 months? Like, it's only been 2 months. How are you even out of the house? And I'm like, out of the house, like I am moving, man. I'm not going to stand still. I mean, I had started jujitsu. I'm trying to heal. I'm not going to escape from it. And what I find was really interesting, and maybe they've changed it now, but when you talk about the structured way to sort of have a, and they had their own little thing too, the topic's a little heavier. So it's sort of a different, you know, way to go. But I love the idea of, okay, you're going to have a difficult conversation, quote unquote, my words, not yours. You need to be able to moderate that with a group of people that may have different opinions. And I think you called it a brave space.
Yeah.
Interesting word. I like that. Like it's brave to just share, right? I mean, people say, oh, I can't believe you actually talk about what happened with Jane and like how you felt about it. I'm like, why wouldn't I? Like, right. You got to know that happens, right? So I'm curious this could go really well or really bad, depending on the group of people, right? What's the control rod? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about that, because I'm fascinated by this, because I really think we need to sit back and really focus on our communities.
Yeah.
Eliminate the BS and strengthen them. And I think entrepreneurship does that, and good conversation and really seeing the humanity and the compassion in everyone.
Oh, you hit on so many good points. And so I'm going to start with the conversation design. And so that's really the science and the art behind the conversation. And I'll share a little bit, because I've been there. I have designed conversations that have gone really, really, really bad. And so I learned quickly how to adjust and ensure a really tight and productive framing. And it's really all about, a couple things. The beginning always starts the tone. And just like in any conversation, the tone and also the framing of this, that we're all here because we believe in something important, that we all have almost a shared goal of moving forward. So we're here to really strive towards something together. We might disagree on how we get there, but we all have our own unique perspective and ways, but we're here because of a shared goal or outcome. And so really however that's framed, even if it's like transportation, people get really passionate about like transportation, you know, from
I was on a SF, San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency advisory committee.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, You think transit's boring. You go to one of these meetings and you just sit there and go, I cannot believe how passionate you are about the church line or the yeah. end Judah.
Yeah. Yes. And every, what I've learned, especially in my journey, especially my awakening and racial equity as well, is that every system has its complexities and its, the nuances there, but if we approach it in a framing of what we all want, when we think about mobility or affordable housing and framing it in the positive, I think that's an important place to start. I was talking about grief. For example, we created a conversation called Grief and Gratitude to make space for exactly how you said, the like being able to really sink into it, but then also to have a glimpse of hope and gratitude of what we have we learned from this or what have we gained through this and through our journey. So making sure that you have a light at the end of the tunnel to aim for. That's the first thing, the framing. The second is really in making sure that people feel connected and trusted to each other first. And so starting with what we call the story of self, oftentimes the intro question and the question one are really a chance for people to reflect on their own lived experiences or on desires or wishes or kind of their personal reflections on how they relate to the topic. And that's really a chance to develop empathy and trust within the small group and kind of establish that brave space. We also have some just common ground rules where it's really, you know, one voice at a time and equal time to share. So it's not about a debate or, you know, someone's going to ask you a qualifying or a follow-up question or so on. It's just everybody gets the same question and they don't have an answer. But then the second question really allows for us to look at it from a more societal view and to maybe throw some cards out on the table that you normally wouldn't say, and that you get to really put out there what are some of the challenges. You can either build on what others have said or maybe even throw something out that contradicts what someone said, but that's okay. This is that space to be able to kind of call out the elephant in the room and put it all out there on the big heavier topics. And then the last question, last round is really helping to resolve the tension that might have been created in that second question, because that tension is really between what you want, the end goal, and where you are now. And that tension is what creates a desire for change. But like every great story, you have to have that tension point. There's not a problem to be solved. There's nothing to resolve. And why are we having this conversation?
Yeah, stories are about change, right?
Exactly.
Stories about change.
Change, transformation. And so the mm-hmm. third question, it's critical for people to continue and wrap up with on the third one, because that's where we bring it down back to reality of, okay, wow, here's a chance for us to really highlight what we want out of this. What we are willing to do to contribute to that shared goal or value, or what's something that you want others to do? What is your request of either an organization or a city or a community or your workplace to do differently? So kind of resolving it into either a request or a commitment or a particular action that you or someone else will take to move forward. So it presents a chance for closure and deeper engagement.
And you've also used this with companies, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does it work differently for a company? Or and the reason I ask this is because startups, entrepreneurs, when they're building their companies, there is always a tension. There's always some like things unsaid, right? Mm-hmm. And usually startups fail while they run out of money. But also it's usually the founders fight or the team fights about some non-shared vision, usually. How does it translate well? I mean, I know you've got companies, cities, universities. I mean, there's definitely clearly different types of people. I'm curious if you have to adjust it a little bit, or is it just depends on the topic or?
Yeah, I'd say we now have a library of over 50 different topics, ranging from diversity, equity, and inclusion to mental health and well-being to like the COVID response in the workplace, and then even sustainability. So the really the it really depends on the goal of the organization that is pretty much sponsoring the, this conversation series, the community conversations. And the way it looks differently, like we just launched a new journey, membership model with a journey that individuals can join. And it's just a simple monthly conversation that they get invited to. And this first track and this first journey is on inclusion and belonging. So the first month is on belonging, and then it goes into bridging the racial divide and the voice of women, and then so on and so on. And each month, a different theme. But the conversation topic is still pretty much the same. We when we went the route of designing the inclusive series originally, we created it for the workplace. But quickly, we realized that even those within the workplace, they don't necessarily want it focus so insular. They really want it to be really thinking about the societal challenges, because people bring that into the workplace.
You are one person. Yeah,
exactly. And it's not that we're trying to isolate this just to the practices and what's happening within the workplace, because it centers the workplace rather than the larger societal realities that people are struggling with and the complexities that that brings. So we have actually shifted. We had originally created it for the workplace lens, and then created a community, basically a mirror twin version of that same topic designed for the community, so that anybody, students and retirees and people in the workforce, or, you know, multiple workforces coming together, could participate and it still be a powerful, relevant conversation. And we found that companies have actually preferred the community version because it opens it up to more, and it creates more opportunity for just personal development and leadership development beyond, you know, focusing in on the company itself. So that's been a big lesson for us, and that has allowed us to even expand our offerings to be able to create products that are not exclusive to a particular company, but actually allow multiple companies to participate. You know, through like a local sponsorship. We just did this recently last year. 6-month program called Inclusive ATL, and had different companies sponsor, send a certain number of employees to this. And what they loved most was hearing different perspectives and meeting people from outside of their organization and learning what they're doing and what they have heard, and that kind of exposure to new ideas and even being able to mix up the demographics, because sometimes companies don't necessarily have a lot of what they would claim a lot of diversity on their teams. They're looking for outside perspectives in order to help really reframe and think broader. Because that's ultimately the value proposition when it comes to diversity is really diversity of thought. You really want, and this is the book that I just read, Conflicted, that says how productive disagreements lead to better outcome. Without having really productive conversations that have a little bit of tension. And that's what, you know, hearing diverse perspectives and allowing airtime for that and separating the personal from the content is crucial in developing an inclusive culture. And so just the art and practice of being able to receive different ideas that might be conflicting, you know, that's okay. And that's great. And that's what we need in order to be able to really come up with the best ideas. And whether we're tackling community planning around transportation, or whether we're tackling racial equity planning in the workplace, or cultural arts planning, you know, wherever we are, I think we've got to be better at disagreeing and doing so in a better, more empathetic way.
Yeah. And respectful, compassionate. Yeah. I mean, that's like Abe Lincoln, you know, is Council of Rivals, right? Like he had people that were like, I don't know if they hated each other would be the good strong word, but they really didn't like each other and didn't like him. But
yeah,
you know, and he's always put up as the, I don't know, from a leadership point of view, you know, how diverse opinions can drive not only a better outcome. I mean, they're uncomfortable, right? I mean, most leaders, you know, right? They're in the bubble. Like no one tells them the truth. They're never not really in control because they don't seek out the disagreement, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard to hear that your awesome idea is not that awesome.
No. Being a leader in a company, I come to the recent epiphany that that's even in our company, and we've had to really, we're still working on it, and we're coming to the place where we're trying to create a culture where we walk towards conflict and not fear it. And I think a lot of people tend to fear because they don't want to mess up the relationship, and so I think we're still really learning the art of dialogue and the power of how to disagree in a way that doesn't mess up the underlying relationship. And so those are just the tweaks into the leadership development and how we lead and how leaders are. It's so important to recognize the foundations of these things too. Like that in every conversation you have, there are two conversations happening actually. There's one about the content, and then there's one about the underlying relationship between the two.
Interesting.
That is the unspoken one. That's the tone. That's the body language. That's the the careful use of the words. But the content is oftentimes the one that is used most, especially in forms of leadership. In reality, especially the more diversity at the table, the more explicit we need to be, which means that means we need to be more focused on the content, explaining a little bit more. Older societies and traditional societies, the underlying relationship has been the main in high trust organizations, high context organizations. Best friends don't necessarily have to be so explicit. Marriages, partners don't have to be as explicit because there's an underlying understanding there. We just need to start to practice these different ways of engaging with one another in a way that creates that brave space, that creates and encourages different perspectives to be spoken without being shut down or knocked down right away. And it's on all of us to do that too.
Yeah.
Make sure the best ideas get heard.
Right, right. I mean, what a great title for a book, Brave Spaces.
Ooh, I'm going to take that.
I'm always about writing books, right? I love writing books, but because it seems like you guys in your company have a unique perspective. I mean, it's kind of interesting because, okay, we're this inclusive company. We're trying to have these conversations with everyone else. But then when we turn inside, we have the same issues that humans have in general. And since, maybe our company's way more diverse and we're really trying to push the edge, we're going to bump into things that are going to be like, we're seeing this early. Mm-hmm. And I always think that if you learn something, you should share it. That's the reason why I do the show. And I appreciate you coming on the show and like really hashing this out for some of those entrepreneurs that find themselves like building a company is about the culture.
Yeah.
First and foremost, it's about having those difficult conversations. I mean, the whole idea of a brave space to kind of, because brave doesn't mean comfortable. It means, we're pushing the envelope, and a lot of startups and founders need to push the envelope. Some of them think and feel that, just the technical prowess or just the product will speak for itself. Or, like there's a huge debate within entrepreneurship and even in the tech world, not a lot of female founders, not a lot of females get, they don't get a lot of investment. Like 2% of venture capital goes to female founders. 2% of the 2% go to female minority founders. I mean, it's like, in one sense, they're a unicorn. they're unique. I mean, they're really unique.
Yeah.
And we got to change that because this job anyone can do, this is not magic. Right. And I think that, as we sort of evolve more towards building communities that matter and really understanding not only like there's structural issues, of course, there's the racial divide, there's all these things that are underlying, and some of them are real. Some of them are just, amplified to make the voice. But fundamentally, when we come together and we sit down at dinner, right?
Yeah.
And we sit down and across from each other, and someone that doesn't look like us, someone that's had a different life experience, and we find the shared humanity and the compassion and the empathy, as you mentioned, in them, that's when we solve the problems. Because Everyone I've ever met, no matter what they look like, no matter who they love or choose to whatever, fundamentally want to have a good life for them and their family. And they just want to see, they don't want this tension.
Right.
But tension and, you know, sorrow and grief, that sells on social media and in the news, right? So they want to tear us apart. It's like pretty obvious. The business model is, for at least for mainstream news, tear us apart so that ratings go up. And it's just horrible.
No.
It's just horrible. And I appreciate companies like yours and what you're doing to elevate the conversation to a point of mutual respect, as well as understanding and caring and compassion. I always say that you have to be empathetic, but empathy doesn't get you all the way. You got to go from empathy to compassion, because compassion makes you take action, right?
Yeah.
Because you can't, if you're like wrapped up and locked up in the empathy, you're just going to be like, oh my God, the world sucks. And you're like, okay, move. How can I help the situation?
Right.
And I really love that model, because I don't know. I mean, it just seems like we got to heal, and maybe heal's the wrong word, or.
That's exactly the word.
Yeah. Or I mean, you know, and again, I live in San Francisco, right? So of course there's the whole progressive culture, the woke culture. I mean, there's all these like underlying things that a lot of people that are more conservative or a different generation, they see this and they see like, why am I being blamed for my, you know, like as an example, like baby boomers, right? Like blamed for X, you know, millennials blame them, and Gen X, we hate both of them. So, you know, whatever, we're the sandwich generation. We're like pretty curmudgeon, like at least I am, at least of all my Gen X buddies. But it's not productive.
Right.
It's not productive. Like, yeah. Okay. Things are messed up. Okay. Full stop. Like, what the hell are you going to do about it? Don't complain. Don't complain about it. Do something about it. Mm-hmm. And I like the fact that you're creating a brave space for people to do that. And then, I mean, how's the success been? I mean, do you guys have metrics? I mean, how do you know it's a success? I mean, it seems like a great idea. I'm curious how. And I love the fact that you, and what all entrepreneurs should do is like, you're out in the marketplace, you provide something, you're like, oh, I can expand this. Like listening to the feedback is really good. So how's the success been? How do you gauge that?
That's a good question. After so many pivots from listening to our customers, our users, and having to go online and kind of ditch dinner and switch our language and even our rebrand, you know, we've had to do a lot of reconciling on, how do we gauge success? I have over here two flip charts from our recent retreat where it talks all about success for participants and success for our customers. And it truly comes down, the one that stands out the most to me is the, does it make me a better person? And does it make me better at my job? Like, is the outcome for us is really helping people be better at becoming more empathetic and compassionate to others, even outside of the initial conversation experience. And we can start to measure feelings of belonging in the culture. And so some of our clients have been using tools that track belonging and measure belonging and measure the sense of inclusion and belonging. Of course, like NPS scores are naturally within, even startups using Gusto can have a monthly survey that goes out to employees that says, hey, would you recommend this as a great place to work? And so on. So we can, of course, track that data. But what we've seen for one of our customers as an example is that after 6 months of engaging their leaders and their whole teams in three different topics over 6 months, they had 40 different conversations that teams led in groups of 5 to 8. They had a 10-point jump and the percentage of people who felt like they belonged at work, moving from 80 to 90%, which is a huge jump given that, you know, only 20 spaces covered the difference in the half there. So that to us, there's so much research being done on the return on investment for a sense of belonging, because people feel like they are heard, that they're valued, that they are seen as their whole selves. They're more likely to stay. They're more likely to work harder for their teams. They're more likely to, you know, not take sick leave because they don't have the mental anxiety of having to handle all of these topics and deal with them alone. They feel like they're part of something. And so that has real tangible benefits. And we've seen that companies of on average size of 10,000 employees, which is way far down the road for a typical entrepreneur, our clients that we work with, since we're B2B, they can see an annual savings of $52 million a year if every employee feels like they belong. So that's how we started.
That's pretty tangible. Yeah.
It is very, and that boils down to about $5,000 per an individual per year. So of, the actual measurable impact of belonging within the workplace itself, because of retention costs and of savings and retention, productivity, less days, and so on.
Yeah, it's an employee leaves. That's a failure. That's a management failure.
Yeah.
Wow. So belonging, huh? Interesting.
So that's one way, but then other ways that we're starting to measure the actual success is through our platform, like how many people who participate are interested in taking a further step, either, reading a deeper article on the topic or taking one of those recommended actions or sharing their perspective and then sharing publicly. So we have these different features built into the platform that can allow participants afterwards to go deeper, reflect, or take action around that particular topic.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm normally not speechless when it comes to stuff like this, because it's just a very reflective thing. Mm. I see like my local community, there's a lot of damage being done. And, I work with professional athletes too, and I see the communities that they come from are way worse than, some of the ones that I'm involved with. And really a lot of times there's always good intention, but the intention just never follows through. Right. And usually it's because the people that are trying to help think, oh, we need to help you. We know what's right. As opposed to the opposite of what resources do you need as a community? Exactly. And I think this is a great way to do that because everyone matters, right? I mean, and depending on like what side of the spectrum, and I call it a spectrum because political spectrum is just like any other spectrum. There's a real lack of compassion for someone's situation that they may or may not have had any control over. And I find that community engagement, I did this a long time ago when I was when I lived in another neighborhood. I found that community engagement, even if you think it's like, God, well, that's a dumb thing to say, this act of belonging, this act of being heard, this act of, look, I told you my truth and you know what? I feel better about it. I take it into consideration, but I've always found there's always like this nugget. Like you dig in, like there's always like one thing, like, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the only way you do that is through a conversation that's productive in a brave space where people feel comfortable and they don't feel like judged. That's the other thing that is really the judgment is in both sides, right? Like you're an idiot because of this. Well, you're an idiot because of that. You're like, well, it's just a different perspective. It's not like anyone's really right, quote unquote, like just different.
Yeah. The suspense of judgment or suspending judgment.
Suspending judgment. I think that seems critical. I think that seems critical even in running a company,
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And wow. I think, and really listening and hearing all the perspectives. And suddenly it's not a us versus them or my idea versus your idea. It's like, okay, let's come up with a better third option here. It's like less of a win lose or zero sum game and making it more of an opportunity to explore something better.
Yeah. It's not your idea or my idea. It's our idea.
Our. Yeah.
The our part.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think more founders, more entrepreneurs need to have that attitude. It's hard. Really, you know, hard. I mean, you know, you're an entrepreneur, you got this great idea. You're like, I'm a genius. I got raised money.
Ideas are cheap and not nice. It's all in the execution.
Persistent execution of a great idea. I mean, I remember reading something about leadership where you should never, as a leader, you should never give your opinion until everyone's given their opinion. That's why this is such an interesting kind of model, because everyone's voice is heard on a topic with these same three questions. Everyone's equal. Mm-hmm. And then you could really let the conversation develop. And when you let the conversation develop as a leader, and I found this, and it's, believe me, early on in my career, this did not happen. the more you listen, the smarter you get.
Oh, yeah.
And so how have you had to, like, in your own, you know, journey as a founder and CEO, how has that shifted? Like, how have you taken what you've learned from all of these conversations and all of what you're trying to do at Inclusive? Like, what can that next generation of entrepreneur, like, think about, like, kind of like a, get a head start on the best way to use the power of Brave Space to help them, you know, grow their company and just be better people?
Yes. Oh gosh. I'm learning, because I think I haven't applied it internally. Anybody who's an entrepreneur listening to this podcast knows that it's tough. It's hard enough trying to build something from nothing and to put things in motion and to set it on course and to keep one eye on finances, another eye on your customers, another eye on your product, your marketing, your sales, and all the things that go with it. So I think it's a feat in and of itself. But once you get to a team size that's definitely over the threshold of, I'd say, 10 or so, it's really important to start to build a culture that is not just driven by you as the founder, that you're not the only one making the decisions, but it's truly allowing, I love that, I wrote this down, the Council of Rivals, but almost instituting a brave space for ideas to be subjected to alternatives and to kind of allow time and space for others to allow poking holes and to be okay with that, and try not to treat it as your own. So I worked with a leadership coach to really help me not think of my company as my first child. I mean, it's like as birthing something that it was mine, you know, like Mama Bear would come out and really try to make it mine. And yes, it's my company at the end of the day. And, you know, I still own majority shares in it, but it's better if others can contribute. I have a team now of 18 people that really care about the future of the company and the mission. You know, they're there for the mission and they want to see this thing flourish. And so allowing them to really apply their ideas and insights will only make it better. Like I only have one perspective and I may have experience, but my history with it may also, you know, create a narrow-mindedness around certain things. So how can I expose myself to other new ideas and new team members with better experience and longer experience? So I am also really trying to put into practice more ways for others. And that may mean, you know, separating myself from the day-to-day and allowing, you know, a proper COO to come in, which we just did. We just hired a rockstar COO.
Wow. Congratulations. That's great.
Thank you. It's huge. So we're really starting to put into practice a way to kind of separate, because some people may not try to go, you know, say something different than the founder, you know, there might be power dynamic there. So
there's a huge power dynamic. Okay, great.
Yeah. So creating that separation may be necessary at some point, but still being able to guide and provide direction where needed and when needed. So that's kind of, I think, something to think about. Obviously, there are stages of growth that priorities are, you know, making sure that you have company first before it. So obviously, and there's
fair point.
There, you know, you got to, obviously, culture comes first, and treating people with dignity and respect is baseline of that. And passionate people with ideas tend to be entrepreneurs. So just I would just, personal advice is, you know, is make sure that your passion doesn't come across as aggression when you're in conversation with your peers and your colleagues. And you might, you know, have an idea, but it sounds like you're holding it really tight, even though it's just an idea, but you're excited about it. And so that's something to keep in mind. And then my last piece of advice, if we're there, I don't know if we're there, the last question.
We are. Go ahead.
There we are. But my one thing that I feel like I would have liked to have known from the very beginning is, you know, make sure that you fall in love with the problem you're trying to solve and stick to that, and make sure you keep returning back to that and why you are doing what you're doing, and make sure that you love the problem so much that you're solving that you're willing to do it for years and years and years and years, because sometimes it's not going to take what you thought would just be 2 years to get it up and going. It might be 5, 7, and that's okay. And it evolves and things, and be willing to evolve with it. So that's all.
Fall in love with the problem. Yeah. I've heard that one before. It's really good advice. So Jen, thanks so much. This has been inspirational and educational and hopeful, inclusive. I encourage everyone to go out there and try it out, have a conversation, you know, see what it's up for or what it is up to. And what you guys are doing is really great. And thanks again. Stay safe and good luck.
Thanks, Jen, for the awesome interview. What a great thing you guys are doing over at Inclusive. Boy, you know, we need to have better conversations that are a lot more structured, but then also allow people to share their thoughts in a safe environment, because I think that's the only way we're going to fix the world. So great job. Now, as promised, here are some actionable insights that I learned from my interview with Jen. Jen recommends that leaders walk towards conflict instead of away from it. As your business grows, start to welcome and value a difference of thought. Yeah, as things get a little more tense, or as growth starts to happen, a lot of leaders put themselves in an echo chamber where they just like have a kind of huge bubble, or they're in the bubble. So ask yourself questions like, am I getting enough diversity of thought? Do I allow people to actually voice an opinion? A lot of times people just sort of entrench back, you know, am I talking too much as a leader? You know, maybe you should just kind of be quiet and listen. That's at least a good way to start. Recognize that every conversation operates at two levels, the spoken and the unspoken. Jen notes that when a group of people are diverse, the spoken, the content of the conversation needs to be more explicit. Yes, you need to have, I think, very clear like definitions of, okay, this is what we're really talking about, and let people kind of open up that conversation. Again, a lot of times people get nervous, especially if there's like a dominant person or they're like a little bit difference of opinion or different looking, different feel. So, you know, ask your questions in terms of like, are people actually talking about things? Are they saying the right thing? Are too many people dominating the conversation? I think that's the reason why her methodology, the way Inclusive is looking at it, is allows people to have a turn at talking, which is super important. Jen offers data that points to a heightened sense of belonging after 6 months of participating in Inclusive conversations. A sense of belonging can translate to partners and employees who feel more invested and are more productive. Yeah, this is 100% true. Belonging to a group, feeling like you belong, feeling like your voice is heard, makes it just so much easier to get things done. But more importantly, you get a better sense of how to get things done and the best ideas. So really ask yourself questions like, and talk to people about it. Do you feel like you're part of the team? How are we doing in terms of inclusiveness? Now, this isn't just like buzzword bingo. This isn't just like check a box, right? This is like true understanding. So a lot of times companies will just kind of check the box on this, you know, inclusive environment, or like they have all these programs that are just basically, you know, again, you know, call it whatever kind of, you know, quote unquote word washing or something, whatever. I don't know exactly what they call that kind of greenwashing type thing, right? As they do with some of the environmental stuff. So, you know, truly try to do the right thing, you know, be authentic about it. And if you got a flat spot there, well, admit you got to work on it. Like, we all got to work on stuff. So there you have it. some actionable insights and some questions to ask yourself related to my interview with Jen. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Ethos podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did creating it. My hope is that you learned something that can make you a little bit better. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do share it with friends and review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also join my email list by visiting theentrepreneurethos.com to get my thoughts on what I'm doing to get better, as well as what I'm working on. You can also pick up my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, if you want to learn the traits, values, and beliefs that I think we need to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient entrepreneur, and frankly, world community. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at TheDailyMBA, and let me know if you have any questions or recommendations for a guest you'd like me to talk to. Also, drop me a note if you try anything we talked about on this or any other episode. I'd love to hear what's working for you. Until next time, keep getting better.